William Shirley Fulton could not have picked a better place to build his dream. The man who made his fortune selling brass in the East came west in the early 1930s, motivated by his passion for Native American history. He was already a devoted collector of art and artifacts. He subscribed to the theory of his time that such endeavors helped preserve cultures that were going extinct. He settled in Texas Canyon east of Tucson and invested in archaeological endeavors from Alaska to South America. By 1937, he'd amassed an impressive collection of artifacts. As the story goes,
probably under the influence of some professors at University of Arizona, including Emil Howery and Byron Cummings, he established a private foundation and hired a professional director.
Introductions are in order.
John Ware.
And Ware is the executive director
of the Amerind Foundation.
John Ware first came to Amerind in 2001, and like so many others, including William Fulton himself, Ware was immediately struck by the raw beauty of the surrounding landscape.
It's a spectacular setting. We're about 5,000 feet. You know, we get hot summers, but it's nothing like Tucson, and certainly nothing like Phoenix. And there are very, very few cities near us that... In fact, the Amerind was located here because it's remote. Mr. Fulton did not want to be in the middle of a metropolitan area. He wanted to be out in the middle of nowhere, as he said, so that he could devote all of his time to research.
And it is a contemplative place, but not completely quiet. A fountain in the courtyard outside the original Fulton house, and in the background, birds everywhere. And there's also the distant rumble of trucks on nearby Interstate 10. John Ware fills us in on Amerind's history in a room known as the Seminary. We sit under a vaulted wooden ceiling with a clear view of the nearby Dragoon Mountains. This was Fulton's original house, and he filled it with his collection of artifacts.
I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure his wife eventually said, "Why don't you build a museum for this stuff?" And he had the resources to do it. Built the first couple of rooms of the museum, and engaged in some archaeological research in collaboration with the University of Arizona. And my guess is that they encouraged him to create a nonprofit that would survive long after he was gone.
Fulton wanted the Amerind Foundation to serve academia, not the general public. His idea was that it should be a center of scholarly interpretation. He was also a product of his time, and in those days, archaeology was often at odds with the wishes of native peoples.
That he was salvaging remnants of cultures that by now, by 2011, they wouldn't exist anymore. They'd be totally assimilated into the mainstream of our culture. He was wrong. A lot of collectors were wrong. I mean, there are more self-identified Native Americans today in the U.S. than there were at the time of Columbus. And they're striving to preserve their culture even more vigorously than museums are.
William Fulton died in 1964, and Amerind tried to continue its quiet, dusty work in the academic world. But as the museum's collection kept growing, so did general public interest in Native American history. And as Ware explains, the fields of archaeology and anthropology were changing.
Most archaeology today is done not by universities, certainly not by small museums. It's done by for-profit companies, environmental consulting firms, doing environmental impact statements and mitigation work in advance of major construction projects. Every time a highway is built, every time a power line is constructed, every time a dam closes water on a river, archaeologists go in and salvage the artifacts and the cultural resources that are impacted by that endeavor. I would guess that well over 90% of the research that's done in the U.S. today is what we call contract archaeology.
Ware says Amerind still does archaeological research and categorizes and archives specimens, but the artifacts all have a purely historical nature. In the past, archaeologists felt free to study everything from excavations, including ritual objects and burial items.
There was very little regard for the feelings and the concerns of living native people. whose ancestors we were digging up.
Now remember, many archaeologists and their patrons like William Fulton were convinced at the time they were doing a service to Native peoples by preserving their cultural artifacts.
I think many Native people saw anthropology and archaeology as the sharp tip of the colonial enterprise. You know, they took our land, now they're going to dig up our ancestors and put them in museum exhibits.
But the rules for what a museum could exhibit or even collect changed in 1990. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act was signed. It's called NAGPRA for short. Basically, NAGPRA requires any federally funded museum or institution to return Native American cultural items like human remains and sacred objects.
When museums were forced to sit down with Native people and actually listen to some of their concerns about what we do as a profession, I think a lot of us started paying attention and understanding that the concerns of living people may be more important than having bones in the closet and bones on the exhibit case. What's come out of that new relationship is a very different understanding of the importance of what we hold in our collections. The process involves notifying Native groups and descendant communities about what our holdings are, asking them for advice on how to treat those holdings, asking them what they would like repatriated, and sitting down at the table and consulting about how that repatriation should take place.
John Ware says Ameren decided to comply with NAGPRA regulations, even though it's privately held. He says the organization has improved its relationship with Native American peoples since NAGPRA was enacted.
Well, Dr. Ware, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you. Let me take you down to collections.
Ware wants to show us some artifacts from an excavation in northern Mexico called Casas Grandes.
So this is about half the collections. This is what we call pots and rocks. This is not conditioned space. Let me get some gloves to put on.
Okay.
Because we don't pick things up with our hands because
sure.
of the oil on the hands.
The specimen collection room at the Amerind is a cool, dry, dusty space, and it's very quiet. There are rows and rows of artifacts, some categorized and labeled, others simply stored on shelves. It feels like sacred space, and it makes one feel almost triumphant. Here lies thousands of stories of where we've been and who we are and how we've changed. You can also feel the emotions of the archaeologists who've worked here over the years. One can sense their attention to detail, their careful handling of history, and their anxiety as their chosen line of work changed before them. Change has also forced the Amerind Foundation and similar organizations to adapt as well. There's an ever-growing interest in our collective history, and the public wants to see the evidence of it. And archaeological organizations now have a mandate to help preserve ancient cultures without sacrificing the dignity of the living. I'm Mark Dugan for Arizona Spotlight.